Oh, yeah, he said, wear something sexy.
A Milwaukee therapist.
She kept making statements about how I would be a great boyfriend.
Crosses the line.
This is a case of power and control.
Now his long-delayed trial.
He needs to pay for what he did.
Comes down to a crucial piece of evidence.
His very distinctive genitalia.
If this goes anywhere, I'm gonna need to identify this.
This week on Open Record.
Maybe he did it, maybe he didn't.
A victim finds her voice.
You violated me. You did the unthinkable to me.
After a life-altering case of broken trust. From the Fox 6 Studios, this is Open Record. I am Brian Polson, and I am joined, as always, this week by Open Record's executive producer, Sarah Smith. Hey, Sarah.
Good morning.
And we are joined again by Contact 6 reporter, Jenna Sachs. Hey, Jenna.
Hi.
Thanks for being here.
Of course.
We are recording this episode on Wednesday, April 17th, for release on Thursday, April 18th. And this week, we are going to talk about a man accused of sexual assault by seven different women over the past quarter century. And not just any man. We are talking about a licensed professional therapist, plus what one victim is now saying now that he's finally back in jail. We'll talk about all of that right after this. So we are going to talk this week about a disgraced former therapist in Milwaukee named George Ramsey. And if you've heard that name before, well, it's not the first time we've actually talked about him here on Open Record. If you go back to Open Record episode number 214, 2 years ago, we talked in depth about how George Ramsey was charged with sexually exploiting three clients and had an even more troubling history of rape allegations dating back to the 1990s. And again, that is episode 214 from March of 2022. Since then, we've been waiting for him to go to trial, and it has been delayed over and over again six times until finally he went before a jury last week.
I know you've reported on this on several different stages of Ramsey's criminal issues and accusations. Could you give us some background on him to start off with?
Yeah, and by the way, it's interesting. My wife, who is a therapist by background, she doesn't practice now, but she noted, she said, you know, since I've known you, you've done a lot of stories on therapists behaving inappropriately. I mean, Gary with a gun was a licensed counselor. I've talked about others who have had sex with clients and things like that. This case really stood out because not only were the charges involving three different clients over a three-year period. George Ramsey was a therapist at a couple of clinics in Milwaukee, and we first encountered him at one called Achievement Associates, which is on Fond du Lac Avenue near Capitol, a little bit north of Capitol there. And we had encountered him when we were actually investigating Achievement Associates and their association with another former clinic called Acacia that had been ripping off the government for millions of dollars. That's a quick backstory as to how we even came across George Ramsey in the first place. But turns out that Ramsey had been accused of sexually exploiting, that's the charge, these three different women. And I've got the criminal complaint somewhere here. The gist of the, there were two people who came forward in 2018, and they didn't know each other. They'd never met each other. They actually, I think, saw him at different locations. But these two women came forward and each said that Ramsey had come on to them. He had hugged them. He had then touched them inappropriately, touched them sexually. And they both went to police at different times. Nothing came of that until 2021, when a third person who we're going to use her name today, her name is Tanya Spencer. Tanya Spencer, we're using her name because she's given us permission. Tanya Spencer came forward in 2021 and said that something like this happened to her as well. She knew nothing about the other two, but she came forward and said she went to go see this therapist and he started saying and doing inappropriate things. In one of her sessions, before the session even began, she says he immediately came across the room and started groping her and apparently felt it was okay to do various things. He forced her to have oral sex, and ultimately she found a way to get out of that situation, and she ended up going and a couple of days later telling police. That finally led to the criminal charges that are underlying this whole case.
So he's charged, and now we're getting to the part where he's going to go to trial. But there were several delays.
There were. And when we first found out about this, I think there had already been a delay or two when we first started looking into George Ramsey. And if this rings a bell, do you remember producer Pete?
Yes.
So producer Pete, who is no longer with Fox 6, he's moved on to other things. He was actually at the time a producer for the Fox 6 investigators. And producer Pete had filed an open records request for the entire criminal history of George Ramsey of the Milwaukee Police Department, and what he got back in return went way beyond this case. So here's a therapist who we knew from, you could look him up in online court records and see he was already a convicted felon, which raises the question, how did this guy get a therapy license, right? But those crimes were drug related. There was one for escape. And you think, okay, he's an AODA counselor. That's a drug counselor. Does some mental health counseling. Maybe someone who's a former addict
would be good at that.
Yeah. Maybe they're good because they've been there. So that wasn't enough for us to say, well, he shouldn't have had a license. But something else came back in those records that was really alarming. And that was that George Ramsey had been accused and arrested, but accused by four different women from 1997 through 2002 of sexual assault. Two of them said he had raped them at knife point. He was arrested on charges of second-degree sexual assault twice, first-degree sexual assault twice, four completely independent victims, never charged.
So what happened with those victims?
Looking at the police records, the best we can tell is at some point in the process, each of them became uncooperative or stopped responding to the criminal justice process. And we've talked to experts, and we did in that original story, who say that that's not unusual, particularly with the women. And we're going to talk more about this later, but particularly with the women that he allegedly selected, because these were each of these alleged victims were people, I believe one was a prostitute, they were people with drug addiction issues, people who were meeting up with him initially to do crack cocaine, smoke crack cocaine, and then maybe something sexual came out of that. So they're victims who are already, or alleged victims, who are already sort of compromised in terms of their own credibility. And you're going to hear more later from Tanya Spencer. We'll talk about how Tanya now says she believes he chose people like her and these others intentionally.
Well, what about the delays, though? So then...
So I'm sorry.
I know we kind of got a little, but you're right.
We needed the question was the delay. So we first get into this case, and we find out that Ramsey has posted bail and is out in the community. And so the first thing I wanted to do as a journalist is try to go talk to him. So we went to go find him, and according to his supervision while he's on release, he was supposed to live at a certain place and work at a certain place. And we went to both of those places and found out he didn't live there and he didn't work there. And we went back and we said, you know, okay, this guy's out. He's not doing what he's supposed to. He was still at the time a licensed therapist. So our concern was, is George Ramsey going to keep seeing clients? Maybe he's doing it for cash in some other clinic. Is he going to keep seeing clients while this case is pending? Which, of course, raised the level of concern about the urgency of whether or not he was going to be going to trial. But every time the trial was scheduled, something came up. Now, one time it was a judge who I believe was sick or maybe had COVID. Another time there may have been a concern on the part of an attorney or the prosecution. But at least two or three different times it was George Ramsey requesting a trial delay. And the most recent two, on the day of trial, the day before trial, all of a sudden there would be a notice that George Ramsey had a medical issue. And he, according to his testimony in court, or his attorney's testimony, has cancer. And that at the last trial date, he had known about the cancer diagnosis the last time they postponed the trial. And on the date of trial, he had a radiation appointment scheduled. And they said he's not going to be able to sit for the trial after having this radiation treatment. And so the judge reluctantly delayed it again. Now, we got to court this time. This is just last week. And the judge had another trial where there was a speedy trial demand. And that meant the Ramsey trial was in the second slot, which meant that they were looking at pushing it yet again. And it's one thing for us as viewers or journalists to be waiting for the outcome of something. But for the victims in this case, they had to wait. And not only did they have to wait, but each time the trial date would come up, they would get emotionally prepared for what is going to be the hardest thing they've ever had to do.
Because they're
get
testifying.
In front of a bunch of strangers and tell your story, tell the story of a sexual assault. And then they're ready to go. And then, sorry, we've got to do it all over again in a few months. So this time they finally said, we're just going to call in a reserve judge to hear the case. And that's what happened.
Do we know if in the meantime, while these delays are taking place, was he working as a counselor or therapist? Did you ever see evidence
of
that?
We did not find evidence. And at a certain point in this process, his license expired. If your question is, why did he have a valid license at all? as far as the state is concerned, they don't have a conviction to say he's guilty of this. So they won't take...
It's not like you could look it up on CCAP and see he was arrested.
Well, but even if they knew, their view of it would be he's not been convicted, he's been accused. And until he's been convicted, we can't take... And now they could. It is theoretically possible that based on a complaint, they could hold a hearing and say, out of an abundance of concern, we're going to suspend him until this is over. They didn't do that. But at a certain point, his license expired. We had no other evidence. We weren't receiving any tips or information that he was still working. So as it turns out, at least we know that once this, or while this process was going on, we don't have any evidence that he was continuing to practice.
Well, and through open records, you got information from Milwaukee police. And then you also requested information from the state. But there was, wasn't there something where they said, no, the records had since been destroyed?
Well, so we wanted to know, when George Ramsey first got his license, we knew that he had this long criminal record that included the drug charges, escape, and some other things. The question was, what about these rape arrests, these four sexual assault arrests? Even though he wasn't convicted, you would think that maybe a body that's deciding, is this someone who should have that kind of access, one-on-one behind locked doors with vulnerable people, with a power dynamic, you'd think they'd at least want to know. There's a track record of accusations that police felt were serious enough that they referred them, or that they made arrest reports, or that they wrote up all these documents. We asked the state for their records of what they got in the background check when they were, when he was applying for a license to become a therapist. And the, you're right, the state came back and said, that's too old. It's too long ago. He got a license, I think, in 2009. And they only keep those for 5 years, 7 years, something like that. So the records had been destroyed. Mm-hmm. So we don't know if the state knew about those. And the state has told me it is likely they wouldn't have known. Because they didn't lead to convictions, they probably would have been left off of a background check.
Okay, so fast forward to April.
Yes.
There was a trial.
Yes. Finally, last week, he goes to trial.
And did we hear from the victims in that trial?
We heard from two of the three victims. So there are three charges for sexual exploitation of a client. And I have, you know, we only knew them until recently by their initials. The first is a woman by the initials of SLW who went to see Ramsey in January of 2018. The other, initials NZG, went to see him in April of 2018. And then Tanya Spencer, who we only knew at the time as TTS, went to see him in March of 2021. And so those three victims were all scheduled to trial. And as I said, they'd been through this ringer of the time delays, the getting prepared. And the question is, are they going to stick around? Are they going to still follow through with this? And the judge said at one point in the process, the concern with these repeated delays is that victims lose faith in the process. And they say, I just want to move on. I don't want to deal with this anymore. When it came to the day of trial, the state still expected to have all three. And in their opening statement, the prosecutor told the jury they would be hearing from three victims. They only heard from two. So in the closing argument, she had to say, don't make anything of the one you didn't hear from.
What happened to that one?
Let's focus on the two. We don't know.
Okay.
NZG is the one who did not appear. On the day she was supposed to testify, which was Tuesday, I believe, of last week, they were still on the phone trying to locate her. Mm-hmm. They have yet to, or they did not in time for trial anyway, locate her. And we don't know why. We don't know if she just, after all this time, said, I can't go through with it. We don't know if there was some other cause. What we know is there were only two victims left to testify. Those two did, and as I said, one of them has since talked to Fox 6, and we're going to talk more about that later as well.
Was there any concern that the victims who were going to testify also in that time period of all the delays for the trial maybe would lose some of the memories of what they had accused him of doing?
Absolutely. I think that's a huge concern, because when you're in a, I mean, with most crimes or some crimes, there are witnesses. There are other people who might be outside observers. Did you hear anything, see anything, record anything? Was there a camera? In a therapy situation, it's one-on-one in a room and there are no cameras. Mm-hmm. There are no other witnesses. The only witness is the defendant and the accuser. That's it. So their memories are crucial. And 6 years ago, do you remember everything that happened in a given situation?
Right.
Might you have actually over that time conflated certain things? And this came up as an example in the testimony. One of the women, in fact, it was Tanya Spencer, who told police that she had seen Ramsey twice. And in that second meeting, when the assault happened, he had opened up a drawer and shown her a gun. And she took that to mean, my life is in danger if I don't comply.
Right.
It came out in testimony, It's now been 3 years for her. Hers was in 2021. It came out in testimony that she said, no, actually, it was the first visit when he showed me the gun. At the second visit, he opened the same drawer and looked at it, but I didn't see the gun.
Got it.
But she took the same meaning that there's a gun in here. You know I have it, right? Mm-hmm. He never said it. Is that a matter of her conflating the memories of the two meetings? I don't know, but those are the kinds of things that become difficult after all this time. Mm-hmm.
So these women are finally able to share their stories
yes.
in court. Did you hear anything similar between them?
Yeah.
In connection to Ramsey.
What was really interesting is, again, these are three women who've never met. Now, whatever their motivations might be, if they were making up these stories, that they all three independently made up stories that had some great similarities was very interesting and very telling. The first one who testified, SLW, testified, and I can't go into too much detail because it's very graphic and we don't want to re-traumatize anyone, and we certainly wouldn't want to be graphic sexually on this podcast, but the order in which he did things to her, the body parts that he touched, the order in which he touched them, the way in which he did, was almost identical to what we heard from Tanya Spencer when she described the order in which he did things. Mm. And it suggests, if they've never spoken to one another and they independently describe it, it suggests he has a certain MO of how he would go about this. So that really stood out. Another similarity was that he had asked each of them, or mentioned to each of them, something about what he wanted them to wear to these appointments. He would say, in one case, in Tanya Spencer's case, she actually still had a text message. He had sent her a private text message, which already crosses a therapeutic line.
Right.
You don't text with your therapist. But he sent her a text message and told her for the next appointment to dress for success. Well, what does that mean? In court, he argued, and his attorney argued, that it just meant, want you to dress in a way that makes you feel good, because you're depressed, want you to feel better. What Tanya Spencer says it meant, and she said he told her this, was he wanted her to dress in a more revealing way. He wanted her to show more of her body. We heard the same thing from SLW, who said he wanted her to, and you heard it, I think, in the cold open at the very top, he wanted her to dress sexy. And so each of these women independently are telling stories that they got a message that they were supposed to dress in a provocative way for his benefit. And then he assaulted them, they say, in a way that sounded very similar.
So those similarities were revealed in court. Were there anything that were stark differences in the testimony?
The biggest difference between those two, and remember, we're down to two now. I think the state was counting on having three women telling these different stories and it would seem overwhelming. Now we're down to two. And the first one, SLW, hers was 6 years ago. So her memory is even more scant. And let's remember this too. When we're talking about the best witnesses you could have as a prosecutor, these are women who, by definition, were seeing him because they have mental health issues. They had substance abuse issues. They had issues going on. So they're already people who have struggles in life. And now, 6 years later, they're asked to recall an incredibly traumatic situation in front of a room full of strangers. And SLW struggled to remember some of those details. But she also didn't have a whole lot of evidence to back it up. She didn't have text messages. She didn't have descriptors that would, all she had was a business card that proved she went to see him. It was an appointment card. And early on, the prosecution just had to prove that these women actually saw this guy. Well, that was a given. She didn't have much else other than her statement. And since her memory was shaky, I think the prosecutor or the jury may have looked at that later and said, I just don't know how we convict based on her word. Her word is shaky. Some of her words are inconsistent. By contrast, Tanya Spencer had evidence. She had not only those text messages, she had something else. She had a crucial piece of evidence that came from her own observation, and it made all the difference in this case. And we are going to talk about what that was when we come right back. So Tanya Spencer is testifying, and you asked about the differences between the two victims, or the two alleged victims. SLW really didn't have a lot of evidence. Tanya Spencer had the text messages, but she had something else that was crucial, and that is her own memory. We've talked to her since the verdict came down, and I just sat down with her. We're recording this on Wednesday the 17th. I sat down with her Tuesday afternoon the 16th, so this was just hours ago. And Tanya said that when she was in that room with Ramsey, now this is at a facility at 3500 Sherman, so it's around Sherman and Fond du Lac in Milwaukee. It's a building with a bunch of businesses in it. His clinic was one thing in there. She goes to see him, She says they're the only two in this clinic, and he locks the door. So she's in with him. He's locked the door. He asks if her phone is off. He comes over, she says, to check on her phone and to turn off the phone. So she realizes, she says, and she testified to this, she said, I realize at this point I'm in trouble. She senses this is going somewhere that she's not comfortable with. And she said, before they even started a session, he starts the assault. And she's thinking, he's shown me the drawer that she believes has a gun in it. The door is locked. He's a big, if you've seen him, he's tall.
Yeah,
he's 6'4", broad, 240, yeah. Something. He said 240. I think he's got to be more than that. He's a tall, mm-hmm. intimidating figure in terms of his stature. And she says, there's nothing I can do. What else can I do? So she had the presence of mind to say, I need to remember yeah. every detail. Mm-hmm. And she remembered what the room looked like. She remembered the shades. But one of the things that stood out is she says very early on in the process, he pulled his pants down and exposed himself. And she made a point of focusing on his private parts. And she said, I'm going to remember these because mm-hmm. I'm going to have to tell somebody later what they looked like.
Mm-hmm.
And she did. She told mm-hmm. police, she gave a very detailed description of George Ramsey's genitalia. Mm-hmm. And among other things, which without getting too graphic, there were certain things about, there was a white coloration on a part of his private parts that she described. He's African American, so mm-hmm. she thought that would stand out. There were some other things that she described, but one of them, and this turned out to be rather embarrassing, I think probably in testimony for George Ramsey, mm-hmm. she said it was really small. And she told police officers that the size stood out to her. So how are police going to prove that her observations are right? What do you think they did?
Did they do a check on him, or how does that work?
They went to jail, and they first went to a judge and they got a search warrant.
Right.
And they went to jail and they said, we're going to take pictures of you. And I think I have there was a motion to suppress. By the defense, motion to suppress certain information, including these photographs. And in that motion to suppress, they laid out what happened. And it indicates that when the pictures were taken in the area of the jail, there were no surveillance cameras. It says mm-hmm. they were taken with reluctance on the part of Mr. Ramsey by two law enforcement officers with the accompanying show of authority that presents. Mr. Ramsey, upon being told the warrant was for pictures of his, I'll say private parts, right. said, oh, hell no. After which one of the officers replied, oh, yeah. And that's what they did. They took photographs, 10 photographs of his genitalia, and the prosecutors showed those pictures to the jury last week. It is one of the most bizarre and uncomfortable moments I have ever experienced mm-hmm. in a public trial. And I can only imagine how it was for the victims, how it was for Mr. Ramsey, and how mm-hmm. it was for those jurors. But it turns out that was a crucial piece of evidence because she gave a description and there were the photographs.
Right. So that supported her case. So when it comes to storytelling on your part, mm-hmm. how do you discuss that in the report on air? We have discussions about this kind of thing all the time, but that's a unique one.
So I'm in court with photographer Mike Pasuik and we're talking about the story we've got to put together for that. It was the first day of testimony. This mm-hmm. was day one. It was a 2-day trial, 3 days if you count jury selection, but really 1 day of testimony, 1 day of closing arguments and jury deliberation. So most of the testimony was on Tuesday. And that day we're thinking, how do we present this? And really, this is a case where there aren't many witnesses. Mm-hmm. There are two victims who are here testifying. George Ramsey testified himself, which we'll talk about in a bit. And then there's just a scant bit of evidence. But it seems like this is one of the key pieces. So when I had a story that was scheduled to air at 5:30 that night, and they ask us when we're doing stories to do a tease in the field. You record something on camera that says a little bit about what the story is and why people might be interested, and hopefully they'll stick around and watch the newscast. And so I recorded a tease where we said a crucial piece of evidence may be the size of the defendant's genitalia, which is a pretty odd thing to say on the news, but mm-hmm. it's true that mm-hmm. the description was, and the managers who heard that said, I don't think we can say that. I don't think we right. should say that. And their reasoning, and maybe I'm disclosing a little more than they would like, but I think one of the reasons is they thought that the outcome would be that he had some sort of oversized, male body part, and that we were almost playing into his ego. And, you know, we don't need to give this guy who's accused of these terrible things any more sort of publicity. But as it turned out, it was the opposite of what everyone expected. It was, in fact, that she identified it as very small and had a police officer on the stand saying it was really small. And in the end, once we did the story, I explained why this was so important to the case. And we did put that in the story. And it seems like an alarmingly personal and embarrassing fact, but yet it seemed important. It was important because that's one of the things this case turned on.
Right. So now you mentioned George Ramsey did take the stand in his own defense. So obviously he's got to answer for some of these accusations.
Well, that's what was really interesting was just the decision. I thought I had been talking to Mike Pasuik the whole time. We're asking sort of what do we think is going to happen? And I said, there's no way George Ramsey's going to testify. The state has the burden of proof. And with his past and his background and the allegations going on here, why would he subject himself to cross-examination by the prosecution? But I think Ramsey viewed this as, I have these women accusing me of these things, and if the jury doesn't hear my side, there's nobody else. We don't have any other witnesses to call. The defense had nobody. They could have just rested without calling anyone. And sometimes that's exactly what defense attorneys do, is they say, it's not our burden to prove he didn't do it. It's your burden to prove he did. Mm-hmm. In this case, George Ramsey felt strongly about getting on the stand and telling his side of the story.
So what was his excuse for having this woman be able to describe his genitalia?
Well, this is really interesting because George Ramsey talked a lot about how what happened in these sessions and what did or didn't happen or what he did or didn't mean by the dress for success and that sort of thing. But the real question was, how can she identify your genitalia unless what she says happened? And so on the stand for the first time, remember, it's been 6 years. He's not told this to any police officers. He's not told this to the prosecution. He's not told this to anyone along the way. He says they were in the office, he and Tanya Spencer. He brings her in and he has her wait in a waiting area and says he has to go use the restroom. And he's in there a while and she comes to knock on the door because she wants to know, when are we getting started? Mm-hmm. And the door pops open. And he is in the middle of using the facilities, and he says that's how she saw him. Mm-hmm. The prosecution pushed back and said, well, I don't understand. Don't you lock the door of the bathroom? And he says, well, this is a bathroom. It's an old office building. No lock on the door. And she says, okay, but wouldn't you hold it shut or do something? Wouldn't you make sure this door is shut? And he said, well, it doesn't shut very well. It doesn't fit in the door frame. And sometimes it just pops open on you. Mm-hmm. And the prosecutor said, she followed up and said, so after all this time, that's the story you're going with, the bathroom story. The bathroom door popped open, and he said, that's it, because that's what happened. So now if you're a juror, you have to decide, do I believe that she was assaulted and made a note of his genitalia, mm-hmm. or that in a moment the door swung open and she got that good of a look and was able to remember and then come up with a story? That's what you're left with at that point. And in her closing argument, I think it was a two-word argument that probably stood out to me. The prosecutor looked at the jury and just said, come on. And that was essentially, is that an excuse you buy? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In the end, it seems it was not an excuse that the jury bought, because they came back with a guilty verdict for that count, mm-hmm. for Tanya Spencer. They did not convict George Ramsey for the sexual exploitation of SLW. And again, you ask why. I was, again, we were waiting for the verdict, Mike Pasuik and I, on Wednesday, and he said, where do you think this is going? What do you think? And I said, the longer it goes, the better it is for him, because they're really thinking about, mm-hmm. this back there. I said, but if they convict, it's going to be on both. If they acquit, it's going to be on both. I can't imagine a split verdict. And yet that's exactly what it was.
Was that a bit unusual to have a split verdict? I don't think I've heard a lot of them in court.
I mean, and I don't know. I'm not on enough of these. I don't watch enough trials to know, mm-hmm. But I also don't know how common it is to have something like this, where it's not a matter of three different charges involving the same victim,
right?
And maybe you convict on one and acquit on the other two or something like that. These are three charges with three independent victims all accusing him of essentially the same thing. It seemed to me that if you feel he's guilty of the third one and you had the similarities in MO between that and the first, mm-hmm. one, you would have to go, if he's guilty of that one, he's guilty of that one too. But I can also imagine if the jury is following the instructions closely, mm-hmm. they are going count by count and saying, does the evidence prove this one? And the evidence didn't prove that one. Does the evidence prove this one? They think it does. And that's what the result was.
Well, and you have to wonder if the outcome would have been different had that third victim come and testify.
And I think that's a huge question we don't know the answer to. Had the third victim come and they hear yet another accounting that sounds just like the other two or has similarities to the other two, might they have said, there's no way this guy didn't do all of these? Remember, the jury is not told about that past history of the four previous sexual assault arrests that never led to convictions. Again, if you're a juror and you hear he's a guy with that kind of track record, seven different women have accused him of sexual assault. Seven different women. And now it's Tanya Spencer who is the only one responsible for a sex crime conviction.
Now, after the verdict, you spoke with Tanya, right?
I did talk with Tanya after the verdict. And in fact, when the verdict came down, I talked to the prosecutor and I said, you know, we'd be interested in hearing from any of these victims if they would like to share their story, whether or not their count led to a conviction. And they said, we'll talk to them. And the prosecutor got back to me and said, both are considering. SLW wasn't sure. We still have not heard, and we are still open to talking and letting SLW share her story. But Tanya Spencer got back right away, and she said she was eager to tell her story, and we're going to talk more about that when we come right back. So Tanya Spencer, and we're using her name, this is a sexual assault victim. Typically in journalism, we would never identify a victim of sexual assault. I heard from Tanya Spencer after talking to prosecutors who talked to the victim witness coordinator, spoke to her, said she was eager to tell her story. And she reached out to me. We went to meet her yesterday. And even as I arrived for the interview, I wasn't sure if she still wants to maintain, you know, we didn't show the witnesses on the stand in the trial to protect their identity. We only used initials, even though they used their names openly in court. We took extra precautions not to identify these victims. And I didn't know how she would feel. And I sat down, I said, Tanya, let's talk through this. And she said, oh, I don't mind. I don't care. I want him to know. Everyone in her life has known for a long time that she's been through this. And now that she knows George Ramsey is in jail, she said, I want to tell my truth and my story. And she was eager and talked at length.
I assume this must have been very emotional for her, just this entire journey of getting finally to that trial date and then getting the conviction. How was she doing emotionally?
It was really a fascinating conversation because she admitted in the conversation, I'm putting on a face for you right now. I look strong. I look, you know, she said, I've prepared for this because I don't want to. She said, I cry all the time and people around me are kind of sick of all of my crying and sort of burdening them with all that this has done to me. So she said, don't get me wrong. Don't be fooled. I am deeply affected by this. But in the interview, she didn't cry. She didn't tear up. She didn't struggle. Instead, she seemed empowered. Mm. She seemed so happy and grateful that after all of this process, that it led to a conviction, that she knows he's in jail. And one of the things she said to me is she wanted a message to be given to the jurors. She wanted the jurors to know that if you're doubting, did I do the right thing? Did we convict an innocent man? She said, I want you to know he is where he belongs. I was there. She goes, I can't speak for the other women. I wasn't there. I was there. I know what happened. He is where he belongs. And you could tell she felt great satisfaction in that.
So at the time of all of this for her, she was engaged when the assault happened. Yeah. What kind of impact did that have?
Well, and it's one of the complicating factors in this case for Tanya is she went to see George Ramsey because of her own mental health needs, but also in part because she was having some trouble in her relationship, which I think is a long-term relationship that long predates even that meeting. And she got there and the therapist, you know, Ramsey asked, you know, do you want him to be a part of this or not? And she said, no, she didn't sign a waiver for that. And she now says, well, it's partly because she wanted to talk about their relationship. And so she comes out of this meeting where she's been assaulted and she says, I said, did you tell anybody right away? I mean, you talk about this. You thought this guy was possibly going to kill you.
Right.
And you got out. Did you go tell anyone? And she said for a couple of days she didn't, because she didn't know what to tell her fiance. She was terrified of what he would think, what her role was in this. Was it her fault? Was she coming on to Ramsey? Was this her plan all along? And she was terrified of what that would do to their relationship. But she said she also couldn't hide it.
Right.
And he kept asking, what's wrong? You're not telling me everything. And eventually she told her fiance, Christopher Sims is his name. She told him enough that he said, we've got to go to police. And they did. And she made that report. When she was in Ramsey's office and she says the door is locked and she thinks he has a gun and he's assaulting her, She came up with a plan. She hatched a plan on the moment to say, I'm going to make him think I'm going along with this. I'm going to do what he says because I don't think I have any other choice. Mm-hmm. And at one point she says she stopped him and she said, we should do this at a hotel, not here. Mm-hmm. So she made an appointment with him to go to a hotel. And she said her plan was actually, I'm going to get my fiance. I'm going to get my siblings and we're going to have them be there instead. And it'll be like a surprise meeting. Ramsey shows up thinking it's this sexual rendezvous and they will confront him. They got advice from others that said, you shouldn't do that. That's not the way to go. She went to police instead. She tells police about what happened. Christopher Sims is still with her today. And she says, pardon me, she says it's not been easy. They've been through a lot. She stood by him. He testified at the trial. Mm-hmm. He testified about his observations of George Ramsey and his memories of how things went down. But she said this was a really traumatic time for her, and it's been a very big challenge to their relationship because it's also affected her ability to be intimate. Anyone who's been through sexual assault or anyone who knows about sexual assault knows it doesn't just impact your memory of what happened. It's not just a single one-time trauma. Yeah. It is something that can impact your relationships going forward forever. And she said she will never be the same person.
Did it affect other relationships as well? I'm assuming the it must be rather traumatic having survived a sexual assault. Does it impact more than just her fiance?
Well, and I think this explains precisely why she seems so, was showing so much happiness and gratitude in this interview, is that now there's a conviction. Now she can point to other people and tell people, see, I was telling you the truth. Mm-hmm. This happened. Because she said there were some people who were either overwhelmed by the trauma she was experiencing. There's only so much support you can give someone as they continue to go through the emotions of things. But then there were questions about, look, we weren't there. We don't know. Was it what you wore? Was it what you said? Was it something you did? Were you cheating on your fiance? And so there's all this sort of question and doubt from people she otherwise loved and cared for and trusted. And she said that was really hard because, and I think this is a common theme among sexual assault victims, and it is one of the reasons so many don't report, is the fear they won't be believed, the fear that they will be blamed. She said so much of this process has been about, well, what were you wearing? What did you say? I mean, did you really take, you know, were you taking what he said the wrong way? Did it really happen? How do we know? The doors were closed. And so 6 years, well, for her, 3 years later, to have a jury say we believe you was obviously very powerful.
Does she have a message for other sex assault victims?
She said the message is to come forward and tell your truth, because she looks back at the women from 1997, 2000, again in 2000, and then in 2002, who initially came forward because they talked to police. They identified George Ramsey as the person who assaulted them, but then backed away. She says, if they hadn't backed out, then this never would have happened to her. When you don't tell your truth with someone like a George Ramsey, she's saying, you risk others being harmed. So come forward. Now, she did tell me something else. We talked about the long delay. She said she actually told the prosecutor at one point, I'm done. I'm out. I can't do this anymore. I don't want to do this anymore. And she said the prosecutors actually threatened her legally. And they said, we have processes to make you come to court. Yeah. We'll hold you in contempt. We can throw you in jail if we have to, but we are going to get you to testify. And while that sounds harsh, she says she is so grateful now that they did that, because it kept her engaged. She said, well, I don't want to do the wrong thing. I'm not the one who should be in trouble here. Right. Okay, I'll come. I'll testify. And she testified, and she says it's the best thing she's done, and she's so happy she did. And her message to others is, don't give up and stick with the process. If you've been through this, get help and tell someone.
So you sat down with her, and that was, we had a camera there. She That's was right. mic'd up. And so we've talked a little bit about it here. Are we going to be able to see this interview?
We are. We are going to be, and hey, executive producer, just so I have this right, we're going to be airing this on Sunday night. Is that right?
Yes.
So if you're listening or seeing this, listening to or seeing this podcast when it's released on Thursday, if you're watching it or hearing it Friday or Saturday, the story will be airing Sunday night on Fox 6 News during the 9 o'clock newscast. If you're watching this on Sunday night on Fox 6, as the Open Record airs on Sunday nights, it will have aired in the news, but it'll be available on our website. You can go to fox6now.com. You can go to Fox Local. You can see it there. You can go to the Fox 6 YouTube channel, and that story will be available. But you will be able to hear from and see Tanya Spencer in her own words. And I think That's time for us to go off the record, which we'll do when we come right back. And it is time for us to go off the record. This is the part of the podcast where we get a little more casual and have a little fun by answering a question for which we have not prepared. Unless you're Sarah, because she prepared the question. What do you have?
All right. There was a recent poll of a couple thousand adults. Two-thirds of them believe they have a family recipe worthy of a best-selling cookbook, or maybe to be in a best-selling cookbook. Is there a recipe that has been handed down through your family? So I think about recipes in general. It used to be cookbooks. Like, sure. I had a drawer full of cookbooks, and now I'm like, if I need something, I'm like, chicken cordon bleu, enter. And I find a recipe that seems decent, has some good reviews. Are family recipes kind of just long gone? What do you guys have anything that's been passed down?
I feel like I'm a terrible person to ask because I'm not a good cook at all. And all the stuff I make is the easiest.
So no one passed anything down to you?
No, I've definitely had, like, I made these peanut butter cookies for the newsroom but they're easy, right? So everything I make has like 5 ingredients or less. So these are 2 Ritz crackers.
That sounds like the title of a book, by the way.
Not, yeah.
5 ingredients or less.
I literally have a book, I think, by the title.
Okay.
And I also have How to Boil Water. That's another one I have. Rachel Ray for Kids.
Okay.
But like, it's 2 peanut butter Ritz crackers with peanut butter in the middle, and then you dunk it in chocolate.
I don't hate
like
that.
Like melted chocolate. And I made it for the newsroom and everybody went nuts. So yeah, I know that went over really well.
I want that.
Why don't we have that here?
Good. Yeah.
Next time
I'll be better about pre. Okay.
So then you put them in the freezer, and then but I also like stuff I make is like the pasta salads that you're used to as a kid. You have like certain things. My mom used to make a layered jello with like 8 layers of jello that I haven't attempted yet, but that kind of went out
jello?
Of style.
Not like the,
she would wake up like in the like middle the of the night
and
put another layer
on
that jello, and I loved that as a kid.
So maybe not so much. Okay. So you remember things, though.
I feel
like a lot of us are like, oh, when I was growing up, I ate this. And then you want to replicate it.
Mine's easy. I know what mine is. So my mom, for every holiday, you know, Thanksgiving, Christmas, whatever it was, she made a mac and cheese. And I know everyone's got a mac and cheese, but I think my mom's was the best.
Oh.
Part of it was that even the preparation was exciting, because she would take blocks of sharp cheddar cheese and she would slice off slices and just make piles of sliced cheese. So as she's preparing, she's got the noodles going, and then, you know, I'll get to what the recipe was in a minute, but as she's doing that, my brother and I, part of our holiday tradition was to go into the kitchen and sneak some
cheese.
Eat the cheese. We sneak cheese. And then at a certain point, she's like, I need enough cheese. That's enough cheese. But we'd sneak cheese. So, but she would have like a layer of mac and cheese, the noodles.
Right.
Then I think some milk, and some butter.
Right.
Really healthy stuff.
Wow.
And then a layer of that cheese.
Sharp
and then
cheddar.
More. And then, you know, another,
like so lasagna.
Three layers.
Uh-huh. So good.
And it was the most delicious thing
ever. That
does
sound really
good. I don't
think
that was handed down to her from anyone, though.
Right.
I don't know if she came up with it, if she found it in a cookbook somewhere, but that's one that I would make again and again. My wife, she has her own, and it's a phenomenal recipe. It's called Smack Your Mama Mac and Cheese. And it is a bunch of different cheeses, and it's amazing. So now we have these two competing mac and cheese recipes.
I'll be the judge of that.
But I feel like you can't go wrong with either one. So,
that's true.
For me, it's more of my grandmother and my mother both loved cooking. She learned from her mom. I learned the love of cooking from them. And it's not, you know, not necessarily a recipe, but just remembering cooking with them on Thanksgiving or Christmas and making stuff for people you love, and I think that's what I get from cooking.
Yeah, and just being in the kitchen reminds you of them.
The most frustrating thing is internet recipes. Oh, because
you have to scroll so far down to get to the actual steps.
All I want to know is what temperature do I put the raw chicken breast in the air fryer? I know we talked about the air. Just give me the temperature and the time, that's all I need. But I've got to start with the... back in such and such, back in St. Old.
There's usually a button that says
jump to recipe. It's the best button that
some
ever lived.
Some have that. If I read the start of a recipe that says, you know, back in St. Olaf, we used the blah, 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 and the smell of the elderberries. I don't care what the temperature. That's all
Brian,
I want to know.
Yes. Can you please promise us that you will write down your recipe for chicken cubes?
Yes.
Chicken
cubes,
so that you can hand
it
down.
We'll have it next time. We're out of time right now. but we are going to take a break, Kale. We're going to take a break and we're going to wrap things up when we come right back. like my chicken cubes. I know it's not a great name, but they're delicious. And if I made them and you came over, Kale, you might actually still enjoy them.
I'm not saying I wouldn't. I just want it written down before, you know, you get too old.
I'll write it down, but first I'm going to talk about my days back in Maryland Heights, Missouri. If you have a topic you would like us to discuss on Open Record or an issue you think we should investigate for Fox 6 News, please send us an email to fox6investigators@fox.com. Sarah, Jenna, thank you for being here today.
You're welcome.
As always, thank you to the people who make this podcast possible, including our editor, Dave Machuda, and our executive producer here, Sarah Smith, and the man behind the video switcher, chief photographer, Kale Zimney. With that, I'm Brian Polson. We'll be back next week.